Hi everyone, welcome back to the 21 and Sensory podcast with me, Emily. On today's episode, I have the lovely Emily Katie on as my special guest, who you might know from social media as @itsEmilyKatie. Emily was previously on episode 51 of the 21 and Sensory podcast, but I shall of course reintroduce her. Emily is an autistic woman with ADHD and OCD. She is a blogger, author and advocate, and works with neurodivergent children and young people. Emily is a trustee for the Autistic Girls Network and former Youth Participation Council member and former public governor for her NHS trust. She is also a #NotAloneTalk host on Twitter, and Emily has given many talks in many different health settings and has also written many articles on her own experiences. So listeners might be thinking, oh, Emily Katie is back on your podcast. But that's because Emily has some very exciting news and she's a published book author. So Emily, do you want to say hi?
Hello. Oh, thank you so much for having me back. So nice to be here.
It's great to have you back on. And also I think it's really nice to have people back on because you can kind of like see where like their kind of like career path has gone, or like you, like last time when we spoke to you, you were kind of still studying, I think.
Yeah, and I think it was one of the first podcasts I'd done as well, and I think I was really nervous.
So oh, listening bless you.
Back to that, I'm like, oh no.
She's like, I'm back on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bless you. So yeah, this is very exciting that you have got a book out. Maybe we could start with that and just kind of explain sort of how did that come about? How do you write a book? Like, I'm kind of fascinated by the whole process of finding a publisher and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it'd be really interesting to know a little bit more about that process.
Yeah, sure. So my book is called Girl Unmasked, How Uncovering My Autism Saved My Life. The process, it's a long process. Like, I think I don't think I realised how long it would be, but it's quite long. I wrote the first draft in, I think it was summer 2021. So obviously okay. That'll be like 2.5 years before, you know, when it's out. So I wrote the first draft. I literally wrote it in about 3 weeks or 3 or 4 weeks because I just hyper-focused on it. And that's what I do. It's such a problem because I think at that point, so I was still at uni and I think it must have been a break or something. So I literally just became completely hyper-fixated on writing and was absorbed into this hole, didn't want to talk to anyone. And then, you know, struggled to eat, struggled to shower and all of the stuff that comes along with hyper-fixation. That was the first draft, which is very, very different to what it is now. I did kind of a good few rewrites along the way. Which took longer because editing is, you know, it's not as easy to get hyper-fixated on. And I suppose the reason I started writing was, why did I start writing? I think, I don't even know. I don't know. I just had a lot to process in my brain. I was angry about stuff that I'd been through. And I think I was quite angry that a lot of other people seemed to be experiencing the same thing. So kind of through the mental health system, through not kind of having those contacts with professionals and difficulties through the education system, but actually still not being recognized even when they're presenting with the challenges of that come along with being kind of autistic in those environments. I was angry and I started to write. Yeah.
Amazing. And also I feel like, you know, you're quite used to like writing on Twitter where you have a limit, or writing a blog post where I guess you don't want to make it kind of too long. So I feel like if you've got a book, you can really go like in depth and be like, right, this is this is everything, this is my life. Like, was it quite difficult to like go back over stuff? Because obviously, you know, as an autistic person, it can be quite it can be quite kind of triggering to like go back and see like all the kind of, you know, I know that you speak a lot about the kind of like systemic failures and things like that with like the NHS and stuff. Like, was it quite a hard thing to go back and think about your past?
Yeah, for sure. I think it wasn't so hard when I was initially doing it in that kind of hyperfixation mode, because I suppose I was writing it for me at the time. Like, it was a way of sort of processing stuff, because I've always loved writing. Ever since I was kind of 3 or 4, I used to carry around a little notebook. I always say, like, when I went to school, I could already read and write. I had to learn to stop reading and writing all of the time because I would just want to do that all the time and not do anything else. So, you know, I'd be sitting there reading kind of full-length novels, and, you know, like journal articles in like year 2 and year 3 when like the class were reading, kind of doing phonics and stuff. Like, I've always loved reading and writing. So I think it was just a way of processing sort of stuff at the time, and also as well as learning more about, I suppose, the different things that might impact me, things like, you know, interoception, emotional dysregulation, alexithymia, like all of those different things. That was sort of how I could process it, by breaking it down into kind of sort of chapters, which was what the initial draft was. The initial draft was much more, I mean, it's still nonfiction, but it's more of a memoir now, whereas at the start it was more of a nonfiction, you know, like a nonfiction sort of guide. There was memoir elements in it, but now it tells my journey sort of in chronological order. Half of it reads as kind of a first person story narrative type thing, so kind of pieces of like sort of creative writing, though it's obviously real what I went through, but then it bounces between that and sort of more nonfiction elements. So I signed with my agent, and the first draft that I rewrote the first draft with her, and that was still very much the same sort of style as I had originally written. And then when I kind of got the publishing deal, they said, look, how would you feel about trying to write it in a different style and trying to write it sort of in this way and just see how it goes? So I did, and it's definitely better than it, like, it's, I suppose that's every time you rewrite something, every new draft you would hope is better than the last one. So I know that now it's miles better than the original first draft. But you know, it's also, it's a sort of a different style. And I think, you know, then I became a lot more conscious of, oh, I'm writing this, and then you have to hand it over, then you hand it over to sort of your editor, and then they go through it. And luckily, you know, I've had a good relationship with my editor, and I felt comfortable the whole way through. But there's still always that, oh my goodness, how do they want me to write this? And I think as a perfectionist, and all the way through school, I've always been like, oh, how do I fit to the mark scheme, and how am I going to get 100% on this? And there didn't seem to be a guide. And that's sort of the bits that I found harder.
It's at least, like, I guess the good thing was that you'd kind of already kind of got a lot of stuff down before you then kind of found a publisher who then kind of narrowed it down, as to kind of, you weren't starting from nothing kind of thing, which I think would be quite scary. But yeah, that's so exciting, and I love that in true kind of autistic ADHD fashion, you were like, right, hyper focus in on this. Like, to write a book in like 3 weeks, like, how many words is it? It's quite it's a chunky book.
Do you know what, that's a really good question. It's probably, I think it's about 80,000 words now.
Wow.
70,000 words. But my first draft was shorter. My first draft, I think, was about 55,000 words. But yeah, I love that phase though, you know, when you just want to get everything out of your head, and you're so engrossed in it, and then when it becomes more like a demand, it's like you've got to get these edits back by this date. It's like, oh no, I don't want to do this now, why did I sign up for this? You know, it's still been fun, and I've still enjoyed it. I've definitely enjoyed kind of crafting, because at the start there was less of that, there wasn't really there were little snippets of it, but not that proper creative writing, first person, present tense, which is how I've always loved writing stories and novels, as in not published novels. This is my first book, but I've grown up loving writing stories. So I did really enjoy that aspect of writing those bits, but it definitely was harder because I was like getting back into that frame of mind. And sometimes it would, you know, they might look at it and say, actually, we need a bit more kind of tension built up here, you know, we don't want to make you feel uncomfortable, but how can, you know, is there anything that we can do in this part? And I'd go, okay, let's dive deeper in.
I guess also, like, you're the expert in you, so the fact that you were writing about yourself meant that you kind of, you know, you knew the topic well, is what I'm trying to say. You didn't have to maybe research like other people had to research for books, or did you have to do kind of any background research?
I definitely did have to, because, so like I said, it jumps between that and nonfiction. And I start off, I start talking about kind of the history of autism and where actually some of our understandings came from. So, you know, where did the opinion that autistic people lack empathy come from? And so I had to do a lot of research into that and actually how autism developed and how it's been viewed, I suppose, over the last, I forgot what year we're in now, what year are we in? 2024. So over the last sort of century, I suppose, since it was the term was first coined. And I think that, you know, I read Steve Silberman's Neurotribes. That's a really good, really, really good read, but it took me a while because there's so much.
It's huge.
You know, that's amazing to see. Yeah, and then also kind of the history of Asperger's and stuff like that. Yeah, so I think that stuff had a lot of research, but I suppose I'd already, I suppose, done a lot of the research in my own developing my own understanding of autism, and over the last few years. Yeah, sorry, rambling as always.
No, it's great. And like, how have you found the kind of, because I think people don't realize that in terms of like publishing a book and stuff, like there's also like a lot of like admin in terms of like PR and marketing and really like trying to push your book out there. Like, how have you found that side of things? And also, when does your book come out? Because we haven't mentioned that yet.
Yeah, my book is out. It was out yesterday. So that's really exciting. Okay, admin, marketing, PR. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? When you think about writing a book, it wasn't even a conscious thing. I didn't really go, right, I'm going to write a book. I just loved writing. And I just sat down one day, I was like, right, I want to put all this down and kind of put it into a book. And then I didn't really know what was going to happen with it. And do you know what? I never even meant to write about myself. And the fact that it's a memoir makes me feel a little bit like I can't believe I've got a memoir. Like, I'm 22, like I don't feel like I should have a memoir out. I don't feel like I'm that important. But the way the story tells best is through using, I suppose, my life, because what I've been through, you know, is not just me. There's a lot of people that end up in the mental health system that might end up sectioned in hospital, and stuff. So it's not just me, and I think it's really important that we talk about that. But yeah, I never meant to write a memoir, and I never meant to write a book that was like so much about me. It feels a little bit daunting, and yeah, I'm a bit nervous. But yeah, I suppose with all the admin and PR, a lot of that is about just getting comfortable with you know what the book is and the fact this book is coming out. And yeah, I've been told I'm trying to learn to talk about it better and not be like, oh yeah, I don't want it. Yeah, thank you. And
please buy this.
Yeah, I know. It's easier online than it is in person, because online, you know, I can just do the nice little graphics and post them. But in person, I'm like, I don't know how to market this in person, but you know, I'm learning.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess like also I didn't like kind of realize how much like pre-orders help in terms of like books coming out and things, and you know how important it is initially to get like pre-orders in and then kind of keep pushing the book. And I guess it must be quite kind of scary as well, like you said, like you are only 22, but the sheer amount of things you've been through in those 22 years is you know why people are so keen to hear your story, and I think are why you're so like, you know, have such a big following online, is because the way that you put things into words is, it just makes sense and it doesn't feel, you know, too academic or researchy. Like, you actually are, you're talking on the right level, if that makes sense. You're talking from lived experience, obviously. But I think that's why so many people like love to follow you, because the way you put things and the graphics that you do on like Instagram and Twitter as well, it's like, oh yes, that's me. That makes sense. How are you kind of juggling all that kind of sort of social media stuff as well as kind of like book stuff as well?
Oh, it's hard, and I work 4 days a week as well, so I work as a nurse 4 days a week, which I love, but you know, I really try and time block my time. So Tuesday to Friday is work, and I try to not be too involved online and stuff. I schedule things to go up, but Tuesday to Friday, you know, is my job, and then it gets to the weekends, and I try and keep a day to, you know, have fun and just be a 22 year old doing stuff with friends and stuff, but
yeah
it can get, my to-do list gets long, and so I try to keep Mondays for my, you know, day of doing things. But yeah, I've not been very good at this in the last few, I was doing well actually, but you know, as it's getting a bit more, I don't know, as it's getting closer to the book kind of coming out. Yeah, I think it's just so important to look after ourselves, isn't it? When we you know, wherever people are, whatever people are doing in your jobs and in life, and especially in education, when you have these demands that keep building up, actually, I know that I won't be able to do all of that well unless I look after myself. And I'm trying to get enough sleep, trying to eat properly. It's just all the basics. Once you get the basics, then you can add a little stuff on top. But yeah, definitely trying to prioritize my well-being at the moment.
It's tricky, isn't it, as well? Like, also, like, a lot of weekends I feel like are recovering from the peopling during the week, which I can imagine in, you know, the role that you do during the week as well, like, it's a lot of peopling, like, you just need that kind of downtime.
I think I'm lucky because, so I work from home 2 days a week and I work in kind of office clinic 2 days a week, so I kind of do a lot of my admin on a Friday, and I think that makes from home usually, and that's
good.
It's quite a good way of switching off from the week and transitioning to the weekend, but it can get a bit much at times, but I love it all, so you know.
That's good, and it sounds like you found a kind of good balance. I know that adulting in general and just you know, feeding yourself and like hygiene and all that, it's like, it's so much to keep on top of, but it sounds like you found a good kind of balance of like work and life. But I feel you with a to-do list, but I am a list person, and I know you are as well. Like, I'm starting to read your book because your publisher sent over like a copy with a watermark on it. Started to read it, and like you talking about lists at the start, and I was like, I'm gonna send you a podcast outline as a list, like, this is how I work.
Lists are brilliant, they're really good, though. This is just a random thought, yesterday I was in a course, we were talking about how actually for neurodivergent people progress can be more like a spiral rather than linear. So actually, rather than having a goal and achieving the goal, it might be that you're kind of going round and round and round before you actually accomplish what you want to do. You kind of go backwards, you might do a little bit of that, then a little bit of that, and you're kind of a bit more all over the place. And actually, when you have a to-do list, how do you measure progress if it's not linear? And that just got me thinking, because I love my to-do list, but I can get quite fixated on it, and actually I need to be able to tick this off the list, but sometimes our brains don't work to a to-do list.
And you'll do things and then you'll be like, can I write on the to-do list to tick, because
all the time you've got to get that bit of dopamine from just ticking off the what you've already done in the day.
Exactly, and I'll do like little sub kind of points as well, just so that I get that satisfaction.
My team lead says that has told me that she's never seen anyone have such a comprehensive, detailed to-do list as I do, and I think is concerned maybe the to-do list stresses me out a bit, but actually it motivates me because I can't do anything unless it's on the list, and as soon as it's on the list, you know, I can do it and tick it off, and it makes the harder tasks easier because I've got that sort of energy and dopamine from ticking off the little small tasks.
Also, do you find like it works quite well in terms of like, I have a terrible memory, and if it's down somewhere, I don't panic about forgetting.
The thing is, my memory is okay, but I really, really panic about forgetting something because I know I will forget something important. So because I'm so panicked about that, I have to write everything down.
Use kind of a list as you were writing like your book at all? Like, did you, like, how did you start to write a book? Did you have like kind of bullet points? Like, where do you start? Or did you start at the introduction, or did you kind of flip between chapters and
I just started from the beginning. I think I wrote a list on a Word document of sort of the topics I sort of wanted to cover. So at the time, I have a lot of blogs, and I had a lot of blog posts on certain topics. So I sort of went through my blogs and was like, okay, what would I want to put into a book? and sort of wrote down some of those topics. And then, yeah, I started from the beginning. I wrote an introduction, like introducing me, which is so strange because when I reread the first draft recently, and it's like from like 19-year-old me's perspective, and now the introduction is so different because it's like me now. And just in like a few years, how much you kind of change and grow as a person is so strange. So kind of glad the process has taken so long, because if 19-year-old me had published a book, I think I'd be like cringing over it now. So I really hope that's not going to be the case in 3 years' time. but yeah, I think I started from the beginning. I've always been, whenever I've sat down to write, you know, I've written drafts of novels all through my teenage years. I've always wanted to start from the start. And I did write an introduction introducing myself. And then I went into chapter one, chapter two. There was a lot of lists in there, I think probably more than there are now. It was all a bit of a scramble, the first draft. But I think that's what it is. You've just got to get your thoughts down on paper. Anything and everything you want to say, it doesn't matter if it's ordered or if it's not ordered. And it doesn't matter if it's terrible, because it's the first draft. It's meant to be terrible. You just got to get all the thoughts from your brain onto paper, and then you can see how you can work with it, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really interesting to hear kind of your process as well, because the fact that you used your kind of previous writing to be like, you know, what is important to bring into this book kind of thing. How have you found, like, have you managed to kind of keep up the blogging alongside kind of the writing the book as well? Or have you had to kind of put that, like, just on hold while you like write? But I guess you wrote it pretty quickly, the initial draft, so.
Oh yeah, the initial draft was like I said, quick, but the drafts that came after that took longer. But I think it's always been very much in like chunks. So you know, I wrote the first draft then, and then I signed with, so that was in kind of the August September time 2021, and then in the December I signed with my agent, and then we did another, we worked on the draft. Well, when I say we, so she went through it, came up with some points, and then I like incorporated them, so like did an edit of the draft, which maybe took me a couple of months, because it wasn't a major, maybe not even a couple of months, because it wasn't a major rework of the draft. And then when she'd submitted it to publishers, I then did like a full rewrite, and that definitely took longer, but that was already must have been the next summer. And so then I think I focused on it for sort of 3 months, just like focusing on it. So it's kind of been in chunks, because then after I'd done that, I gave it to them and then they went through it. So I had like a few months away from it, and then I got it back and I kind of redid the next draft. So it's sort of been in like little spurts of when I've been writing. And so I suppose during those times, blogging probably has fallen behind a bit. Actually, because when I started my job, not the September just gone, the September before, I don't think I really did any blogs for the first 6 months or so. I could be wrong there. Maybe there's one a week on my website, but I really don't think there was, because I was working 5 days at the time and everything just kind of slipped. But then when I went down to 4 days, I was like, oh, I really want to start blogging again, because I really enjoy that, just getting thoughts, you know, just getting thoughts out. When I was 13, 14, I started an online anonymous blog about anxiety. I used to go and sit in the school library at school, and after I'd had like a panic attack in class, I'd go and sit in the library and I'd write up like an angry blog to like try and get my like emotions out. So I've always loved blogging and kind of putting things into words. I think words can be really healing and help you process stuff. And when I post kind of the graphics online, I mean, I don't know about you, but a lot of the time it's for what I needed to understand. And sometimes I've made posts and graphics because it's about how I am processing that, and then I've just shared it.
Also, sometimes I put stuff out and I'm like, you know, it's me trying to process things, like you were saying, but I'm also like, does anyone else get this? Does anyone else experience this? Because like, I feel so alone with this. And then there'll just be, you know, loads of people be like, yes, I struggle with this and stuff. And it's just that sense of community, I think. And I feel like you have such a big community online that it must be quite nice to kind of, I don't know, just for people to appreciate your work and kind of see themselves in it, like people relating to your stuff. Like that always kind of makes me feel quite like, oh.
Yeah. And one of the reasons I wrote the book, I think, as well, was because or at least carried on with writing the book, was because when I was diagnosed with autism, I was 16, and one of the first things I did was go online and try and find like different resources and stuff. And at the time there was some, because, you know, there are some people who've been in this space for ages and have done some, have done, you know, really important work. But I definitely think in the last few years, it's, you know, there's been a lot more stuff, which is amazing, because we need to hear such a variety of people's voices and stories. But it was the stories that I read and the stuff I read from other autistic people online that helped me to understand autism and helped me to understand myself and process things in a way that, you know, professionals could never provide, or an online course or whatever it is. I couldn't get that feeling of understanding from them. It was actually, you know, yeah, meeting the community online that made me think, oh my goodness, I'm really not alone. I remember posting my first tweet. I mean, I don't know if it was my first one, but in my memory it was my first one. I was in sick form, and I think it was probably like Autism Awareness Week or something. I feel like it was like April of year 13, and I posted a tweet about like autistic girls, but in a way that I would not view it now. I think I was like, autism in girls is different, on all of that stuff, which I don't agree with now. But just the response to that at the time, when I had maybe 50 followers or something, I was like, oh my goodness, there's autistic people online, oh wow. And then I started following them and just learning so much from them that actually, yeah, everything I know I've learned from other autistic people in this space, really.
And I think that in itself is kind of, it's fascinating, but also kind of sad, because I feel like, you know, you get your diagnosis and then you're not really given any, you're not given anything basically, or, you know, you're kind of offered a course. I remember me and my mum went on a recovery college course.
Really?
And spoiler alert, guys, you can't recover from autism. Not that I'd want to. I don't know why it was called recovery college. Anyway, honestly, didn't learn that much on it at all. It was pretty terrible. And like you said, ended up on the internet finding, you know, way more useful stuff online. And it's just like, oh, why can't it come, you know, from the actual professionals as well? And the fact that you've had to kind of, you know, share your kind of journey online, and the fact that you've given like talks for NHS and been kind of, you know, on boards and stuff, like, it's kind of worrying that you have to be like, you know, give them the information almost.
It is. And also, but also, it's good that they're incorporating autistic people into the teaching, the training, but it needs to be done in a more standardized way. So when you're looking at like kind of university courses and stuff, so I'm thinking of nursing as well, there's no requirement that they teach about autism or ADHD. You know, we didn't have a single thing really on autism or ADHD in my course. I think we maybe had like a scenario of an autistic person. So it needs to be more standardized with kind of autistic people at the forefront of it. The recovery college is an interesting thing. So that's kind of a, recovery college is a sort of a, I don't know a huge amount about them, but it is kind of like a program sort of across the UK where they offer kind of stuff to people struggling with their mental health. And obviously it's good that they've included autism in that, but actually you need to understand, people need to, it's weird, isn't it, thinking I'm going to recovery college to learn about autism, or what do I need to recover from? Maybe it's kind of, maybe it should be more framed around actually autistic people struggling with their mental health, rather than you know, autism. I was going to say something, and the thought's gone out of my brain.
That's okay.
No, what happens, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. And like you talking about like stuff that needs to be like standardized, I guess also even just the diagnostic process, I think, like, because you hear so many different, you know, I've had people come on the podcast that said like, oh, I had to read a picture book with frogs in it.
Yeah, me too. But I did tell them that they were talking about frogs.
Amazing. And I'm just like, how did I have such a different experience? And, you know, maybe I'm an hour or two away from that person or something. And it's just like, how are
we... Can I ask, how old were you when you were diagnosed or had your assessment?
I was 25.
Okay. I wonder if it's... Do you know if it was through the... with the ADOS assessment?
I think it was... It was...
Was it under NHS?
Yeah, it was NHS. But yeah, I didn't have the picture book.
Did you have to read any kind of book?
No, I wasn't. I didn't have to do any kind of exercise or task. It was all like interview style, I guess.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so that was when you hear, you know, other people where it was more like kind of child based. It's like, oh, like why?
Yeah, like mean, if the ADOS is pretty standard across the NHS, you know, is used across the NHS, but we know that it doesn't tend to pick up. It often doesn't pick up autistic girls, or you know, potentially anyone that's not kind of a cis white boy. But that's because that's how it was developed based on research from that group. But you know, the Lorna Wing Centre through the National Autistic Society, they use the DISCO model of assessment. I never know if it's meant to be pronounced DISCO or DISCO, but because it spells DISCO, I feel like it's probably DISCO.
Yeah, way more fun to say.
Which is more interview style based, I think, as well. So yeah, but the NHS is always, I think, the last ones to pick up new stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just feel like they're going to be the last ones to adapt the assessment models that they use. But I do think it will happen.
I guess to some extent they want to see it working somewhere else before they, you know, do it kind of wider. But yeah, I hear such good things about like the Lorna Wing kind of.
Yeah, me too. I often recommend them as if people are looking to go for a private assessment, because like you have heard quite good feedback from people that have been there.
Mm-hmm. I think I was just lucky to, this is going off topic, but I managed to have my NHS assessment November 2019. So like just before pandemic.
Yeah,
started to, so I was just so lucky. But yeah, it is interesting how stuff is so different in the UK despite
I was summer 2018, but I went private, so I was under NHS, I was under CAMS at the time, and they sort of supported, like they just confirmed it, because not that it needs confirming, but they accepted it, if you will.
Because I know sometimes that's a bit of a topic, isn't it? Whether they'll take a private. Yeah,
I think more so with ADHD, because of, you know, with an autism diagnosis, there's no medication necessarily. There's no medication impact, but with ADHD, there obviously is. So I stayed on the NHS waiting list for ADHD, and I had was assessed, diagnosed January before. So that took a while, but I did that through the NHS because of the implications with medication. It's just so inaccessible to so many people, assessment and diagnosis, isn't it?
Also, the whole ADHD like medication stuff, like I saw that you'd only just managed to like get it back, is that right?
I've been quite lucky actually, because I've only had, so the patient safety alert came out in, I think it was October, and the main medication that's been impacted is the one that I'm on, Elvance, though others have been impacted too. But I've actually, so far, I've only had 3 weeks off it at Christmas, which was so bad. You know, I went a lot of my life without ADHD medication, but I think it's the sudden adjustment. And I did start to adjust to it, but it takes time to adjust. And when you're kind of going from having it to not having it, and then going back to having it again, it messes with everything, your sleep, your appetite, your mood, your productivity and everything. But I'm about to run out again, and I'm not very confident about the next prescription, because it almost seems to have got slightly worse again.
Oh god, so, yeah, that's terrifying as well, like not knowing.
It is, and I think it's because of that adjustment. I know that there'll be a few weeks at least where I will not feel good, so let's just hope it's not over book launch time.
Oh god, bless you. And also, like, I feel like whenever they change like the like packaging or like the brand name of stuff and you go pick it up from the chemist, I'm always like, I can't even deal with this change, let alone like not being able to get it. So I can imagine that's really stressful.
Yeah, a little bit. But it is what it is. And actually, I like to think I'm quite privileged now in my life that I do have more control and autonomy over stuff than I ever did at school. You know, I've got a very supportive team at work. I feel like there is a lot. I feel like I do feel pressure everywhere in life, but that often comes from myself rather than from other people. I think we could,
also, it's kind of a perfectionism thing as well, isn't it? Like,
yeah. I'm working on it. Any tips for perfectionism?
Oh no, I'm the same, don't worry. It's, yeah, and the kind of imposter syndrome of being like, why are people coming to me for things? Like,
oh, I've got this imposter syndrome massively over the fact I have to tell people that my book's a memoir. I just think I can't believe it, but yeah, I think for some of us as well, when we've been through a lot of that pain and struggles and challenges, we want to make something good out of it, and we need a purpose to drive us forward. And that was for me, that was going and doing nursing and working with autistic and ADHD kids and writing a book and doing the talks, because otherwise I feel like I went through it all for no reason in my head. For me, I just feel, and I don't think there should be that pressure on anyone at all, because no one has a responsibility to talk about what they've been through. No one has to educate anyone at all. Mm-hmm. You know, if anything, go and take a holiday if you can, and try and, you know, move on with your life. And sometimes I think maybe I should just leave all this behind and move on. Yeah, just go and do something completely different. But I know that I've just got that drive in me to try and make a perp, try and make something good come out of the bad stuff.
Yeah, and I think you'd probably miss being able to share that kind of side of things, and I think also the community would miss your input as well. So,
and listen, if I went on holiday and did something else, I'd still be autistic, and exactly. So there'd still be all the difficulties that were coming, and I'd probably still want to tell someone, because
yeah,
impulsivity, you need to get it out of you, and sometimes social media can be a really helpful tool to connect with other people.
Yeah, and also I was going to say to you, you've got some big name testimonials going on about your book. Can we chat about that?
Okay. Yeah, I know.
Like, people like your book, and these people are big people. This is good.
I know. Wow. Yeah, I actually can't believe it. Every time I just get, I feel really happy about it, but you know, also that imposter syndrome is there, and
oh yeah,
I feel so grateful though, and yeah, very grateful.
Yeah, people like Fern Brady saying lovely stuff.
Like, no, so she's on the
cover. Must be like, oh.
So she's on the front cover with her quote. Oh, I just think Fern's brilliant. I'm going to see her, one of her shows in, I think, September with my friends. I can't wait.
Oh, it's going to be so good.
Yeah, having read her book as well. Have you read her book?
Yes. Oh my word.
Amazing.
I just had no idea, like, the kind of backstory to her, obviously.
No.
But also just the way her coming to terms with her diagnosis as well was fascinating.
It was really fascinating to see sort of what she'd been through and how she is where she is now, because I wouldn't have had a clue either. But also her writing style was just fun. It was just really
it
was great to read. So yeah, it was a major privilege to read and endorse my book.
Also, I like that you looked behind you at your bookcase. Do you have a copy of your book on your bookcase? Please tell me you do.
Oh, no. So, wait, when is this out? Yes, I do. I have loads. I've just got a cover, but it's the cover without the quote on it. It's like an old cover.
Okay.
And also the idea of going into a bookshop and like finding my book. Like, I'm so excited for that, because that has literally been my dream since I was little. Like, I always wanted to be an author. And I would walk into a bookshop and be like, oh, mummy, my book's going to be in here one day. At the time, I was like, I'm going to be writing, like, fiction, like, fantasy and, I don't know, something. I'm not a fantasy reader, so why I ever thought I was going to write fantasy, I don't know.
Know.
So that's just going to feel surreal, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, those big emotions are hard to deal with as well. Sometimes I find that actually the good, overwhelming emotion, you know, the good emotions can be just as overwhelming as the negative emotions sometimes.
Oh god, yeah. And also just like feeling stuff, like I always get it with, like, if I move jobs or have a new job and people are like happy for me, I'm like, I don't feel that. Why is this? I know why it is, autism, but it's frustrating, isn't it, when you can't feel like proud of yourself, kind of thing.
Yeah, and especially with being autistic and kind of, you know, growing up through, I remember like at primary school, I would often be told like, oh, you seem a bit bossy, or I'll just tone it down a little bit and, you know, think about other people and stuff that I'm constantly, and it wasn't because I didn't think about other people. Like I was always quite giving in things, but you'd get so absorbed in your own brain that sometimes you would, I don't know, I would forget how that was coming across to other people. So I feel like I'm like extra mindful of, oh yeah, I'm like, I feel, you know, when you share something good, you're like, oh gosh, but what if that person's had a really rubbish day? Like I'm just so ultra conscious of all of that. But yeah, good emotions can be overwhelming, basically.
Yeah. And I don't think people realise how taxing that is for us as autistic people. Like,
yeah,
you know, I'm never gonna be like my best self at the end of the day because of, you know, just the sheer amount of input there has been, and
yeah,
like how much that weighs on your mind as well. So yeah, it's nice to hear someone else gets that.
But it's only something I think I've really learned in recent years, maybe not even recent years, maybe sort of the last year or so, is about how actually those intense positive emotions can actually contribute to sort of burnout or shutdowns just as much as the negative emotions can.
Yeah that's true. You kind of think it has to be negative to make an impact that actually overwhelm is, you know, can be positive as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's so true.
I will be having kind of some book signings, not Ooh. Officially confirmed yet, as in where they are and when they are, but I will be doing definitely a book signing, I think, in London.
That's gonna be surreal.
I mean, this is the whole thing. I don't know why people want to come and like have me sign the book, but you know, people have expressed interest, and it'd be so nice just to meet people anyway. So
yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god, signing your name in your book. What?
I know. Do you know what I was thinking? I was like, oh, what color am I gonna write it? Like, what colour am I going to write it in? How am I going to write it? What am I going to say? Like, I'm like, do I need to write some, like, examples that I can, like, learn? Because otherwise I'm going to be sat there and I'm like, I don't want to ruin your book because I don't know how to write it. But I do have some nice pens.
Excellent. I can just imagine you at home practicing, like, right, is that the kind of style I'm going with? So, yeah, we've been chatting for almost an hour and it's gone really quickly. But let's go back to your book, and if you can give us a little bit of a sneak peek as to what it includes and where people can order it from.
Yeah, so it's called Girl Unmasked, How Uncovering My Autism Saved My Life. It's a memoir, which is crazy to me. But yeah, it's a memoir telling my story of growing up as an undiagnosed autistic girl, covering sort of the years leading up to my diagnosis. It starts sort of around the age of 8 when it starts, covers the years of kind of anxiety, panic attacks, OCD, which sort of consumed me, landed me in a mental health unit when I was 16. And then covers the years after, kind of discovering that I was autistic, how I sought to understand myself and started to try and turn my life around, turning pain into purpose, if you will, in a very cringy quote, but sometimes resonates with me a little bit. Yeah. So it sort of covers my life from age 8 to 18 really, and anxiety, masking, autism, just being an undiagnosed autistic girl through the school system and what that was like.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. And where, I'm assuming all good bookshops will be stocking your lovely book.
Yeah, I mean, you can get it on obviously Amazon, and then WH Smith, Waterstones, your local bookshop, hopefully they can get it into. So yeah, really anywhere.
I'm gonna go on a hunt for it and see if I can take a photo of it in a bookshop.
Oh, I mean, I'm also gonna go on a hunt for it as well, because that's just, yeah, seeing it in a bookshop in real life is probably gonna feel like I'm dreaming, so that's really exciting.
Are you gonna go up to the counter and be like, I'm the author, can I sign this? Like, you know, they put like stickers on the front where it's signed.
Oh, I don't know. I have thought about it, but then the idea of saying that to the shop, to like the shopkeeper, is like a bit anxiety provoking. And like, what if they're like, no? Like, they'll be like, no, you absolutely cannot sign this book. Then I'll be like, all right.
Like, I promise it's me.
But we'll see. That would be quite fun to do.
Yeah, definitely.
Of a once in a lifetime sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, why not? Like, yeah. You have to let us know if you do that. amazing. Thank you so much for coming on and for being up for a chat. And yeah, everyone, go buy Emily's book.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been so lovely to talk to you again. Yeah, thanks for wanting me to come back.
No worries. It's been great to chat.
Yeah, you do wonderful things.
Oh, thank you.